tuning in to another edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's most listened to farm radio network. We have plenty of news to discuss today as Indiana legislators have called a session at the State House, how budget cuts could impact agriculture. We'll also get a planting update today from Southern Indiana. Bayer is saying they may stop producing glyphosate, the world's most popular weed killer. What that could mean for Hoosier farmers. And we'll tell you about a great opportunity for high school students interested in a career in agriculture coming this summer to Huntington University. Grain market analysis is coming up shortly, but let's begin with the weather. After some rain to close out the week on Friday, Hat Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin is looking for a dry weekend in our first planting weather forecast of the season presented by Beacon Credit Union. He's looking for good evaporation and drying both Saturday and Sunday.
Probably seeing some west and northwest breezes in here, so it may not be super warm, especially compared to what we saw Thursday and Friday. But we should be seeing a good drying, good evaporation over the weekend here. I'm going to stretch this dry weather into the early part of Monday as well. So that is going to be 2.5, maybe if you're lucky, 3 days back to back to back that are going to be suitable for field work, especially if you stay on the lower end of the rain range from Friday.
Martin is tracking a frontal boundary that comes in two waves Tuesday, early hit and miss showers in the northern part of the state, and then better action later in the day across the whole state.
Right now, I'm going to say anywhere from 1/4 to 1 inch of precipitation. With that, though, the 1 inch is going to be coming on the back of thunderstorms, and those seem to be more so placed in the south and southwest than anywhere else. I do think everybody gets wet on Tuesday into Wednesday, but it's not going to be over-the-top precipitation.
Martin says the rest of the week is still a little bit up in the air. He's liking a relatively dry forecast from May 1st to the 5th, but he is seeing some potential for moisture coming from the south on the afternoon of the 1st.
That's mostly going to be I-70 southward, where we could see a chance of moisture. It's going to be coming through very quickly, so I think we'll get back to drying soon after. Overall, with 3 days in between a couple of weather systems here, I think we have an opportunity for field work, but it's going to be touch and go and heavily dependent on how much rain you do see when it falls. We've got some pretty wide rain ranges here, and also the ability to miss some scattered showers.
Stick around, Martin has his full Indiana farm forecast coming up in just a few moments here on Hoosier Ag This Week. The 2025 Indiana legislative session has now come to a close. One of the final items of business was finalizing a balanced budget for the next 2 years for the state. And we discussed it on the latest Indiana Ag Policy podcast from Hoosier Ag Today. It became increasingly difficult to do after last week's budget forecast was released. Steve Howell with the Indiana Corn Growers Association and Indiana Soybean Alliance.
We did have the April revenue forecast that showed like $2.4 billion shortfall. They're going to have to make that up somewhere. And we do know that there is a rainy day fund and there's a front moving through and it's starting to rain. So they're going to have to pull from that. However, there's going to have to be other cuts.
And those cuts came down in a big way for many state agencies, including the Indiana State Department of Agriculture. Their general fund was decreased by 5%, which was expected for most departments. But cuts to funding for the Grain Buyers Agency brings the total revenue lost to somewhere around 12 to 13%. As for the Board of Animal Health, their funding did not get cut, thankfully. Sources tell Hoosier Ag Today the issue they have is that federal money is way behind schedule in getting paid to the department. The Animal Disease Diagnostic Laboratory at Purdue kept its funding of $5 million annually for the next 2 years, the same as before. Howell emphasizes the importance of getting involved with your Ag Policy membership group to make sure your voice is heard and is being represented at the State House.
We've always been fortunate. Indiana's been a great place to do business, whether it's agriculture or any other business. We've had a friendly regulatory environment, friendly tax environment. But as these cuts go pretty deep in some of these agencies and perhaps even deeper, some of the basic functions of this regulatory environment that's made Indiana a good place to do business, that's being threatened.
Be sure to tune into the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast in the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app. It's free for your iPhone or Android device. We touch on the budget. We talk about SB 1 and what that means for farmers and your property taxes. And we also talk about water policy at the State House this year and much more. Again, that's the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. Find it wherever you listen to podcasts. The Indiana Farm Forecast with Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin is on the way, and more farm news is coming up as well. But right now, it's time to turn our attention to the markets. And to do that, let's welcome in Andy Eubank. Hello, Andy.
Hi, Eric. Thanks. The market's choppy during much of the week, very little movement at times. The markets were very flat on Friday. The numbers coming up. First, market analysis. I grabbed that in the middle of the trading day from Brian Basting at Advanced Trading. As we wrap up the week in the middle of the session, Brian, as you and I speak, the markets are fairly close to flat. Not a whole lot of movement. Choppy trade certainly today and through much of the week. How would you characterize the week overall?
Thanks for having me, Andy. Yeah, I think that's a good characterization. We had the option expiration for May options on corn and soybean futures on Friday, the 25th. And typically that is kind of a positioning day. And we're seeing that the May corn futures, for example, hover right near 480 a bushel. May soybean futures hover right near 1050 a bushel. So kind of marking time until those options expire. But I do think that we got a good start to planting in some areas. I realize that it's been a challenge there in Indiana for many folks to get started here. But as you move further west, look at the crop progress report of this past week. Some very good progress, particularly west of Mississippi. We'll see what the USDA tells us on Monday of this week. That'll be an important report. But I'd say, as you said, more or less choppiness, waiting to see what the weather forecasts look like, any news on the export front or geopolitical front, for that matter.
It seems in recent weeks the market leader has been corn, and it also seems this week that soybeans took over.
Soybeans did take over for a bit, Andy. We're seeing a little bit of a resurgence, maybe it's too strong a word, but an uptick, I'll say, in export demand for beans as the crop year moves well past this halfway point now, and actually looking at maybe the USDA might be a tad conservative on what their annual export forecast is. We're just seeing competitive prices right now for U.S. beans compared to Brazilian beans for various destinations. We're seeing good export sales of soybean oil, too. So if you look at that May soybean contract, this week it made the highest level since about the third week in February. So, again, not a resurgence bullish market. I don't want to give the impression to your listeners that this market is going to take off and never look back. We're still looking at probably close to a 390 to 400 million bushel carryout. But regardless, I think producers want to continue to manage price movement, Andy. If they got any old crop left, you want to defend your balance sheet, take advantage of this rally here. If you've got call options on old crop beans, for example, continue to manage those options. Obviously, they'd be out in the July now, probably. But regardless, you want to continue to manage price, look at new crop opportunities, too. But beans have shown some life here. I do want to remind your listeners, however, Andy, I don't think that the Argentina crop is having any issues. They're harvesting that crop down there now.
Brian Basting, economist at Advanced Trading. His number is 309-664-2314. On the Hat Friday Farm Market Review, a penny and a half higher. May corn, July also a penny and a half up. May settles at 478 and three quarters, July 485 and a half, down three quarters on December 455 and three quarters. May beans 1049 and three quarters, down three and a quarter, two and three quarters off on the July 1059 and a quarter, and November a half point down at 1035. Just to the high side in wheat, May 530 up three quarters, July 545 up a half cent. And the meats quietly up. June live cattle, 208.25, up 25 cents. June lean hogs, a stronger day, 101.15, a 122 gain. You are now up to date on the markets, but the weekend show has just begun. I'm Andy Eubank. This is Hoosier Ag This Week.
MicroEssentials S10 from the Mosaic Company delivers uniform nutrient distribution. Every single granule contains nitrogen, phosphorus, and sulfur. MicroEssentials has superior nutrient distribution when compared to MAP or DAP blends. This means your crop does not have to search for those nutrients. improving nutrient uptake. Choose a superior phosphorus fertilizer with MicroEssentials. Contact your local ag retailer to learn more.
Times are uncertain in agriculture today. There's no farm bill, trade tariffs are looming, and the property tax debate is a mess. There is one thing you can depend on. Hoosier Ag Today is here to keep you informed with all the information you need that's vital and relevant to your farming operation. Even if it isn't good news, you'll hear it here first at Hoosier Ag Today. On air, online, and at the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app.
We've got a dry weekend this weekend, but there's plenty of moisture potential over the next few weeks. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Weekend Weather Outlook Planting Edition. And here's what we've got as we take a look at the setup. As we said, this weekend, very, very nice. We picked up some moisture yesterday. That caused a little bit of a pause in field work in parts of the state. But I think it's a short-term pause, all things considered. High pressure setting up right now today over the Great Lakes to our north over Michigan. We're going to be seeing beautiful sunshine for Saturday, even sunnier skies, if that's possible. Tomorrow, good dry down, good evaporation. I think we squeezed out a dry Monday as well over Indiana. Clouds increasing overnight Monday night. For Tuesday, we see scattered showers developing, especially in the afternoon and evening. Rains can be anywhere from a quarter to three quarters of an inch over most of the state. 100% coverage as it looks right now. I think those scattered rain showers are done in the north as we approach midnight. Here's where it gets interesting. In the south, we see this frontal boundary stall, and that then becomes a corridor for additional moisture to come out of a major low sitting over Texas and the lower Mississippi River Valley. So I don't think that we are done with rains on Wednesday at all in the south. Maybe they taper off and kind of get a little sparse, but there's rain around through Wednesday. Then overnight Wednesday night through Thursday the 1st, we've got another strong low coming up that corridor, probably ending up with 70% coverage across the state from the Hoosier Heartland Corridor southward. But we can see an additional on Wednesday, probably 10th to half an inch of precipitation with that 40% coverage, 30% coverage. And then Thursday, 70% coverage with a quarter to 1.5 inches. Could be some strong thunderstorms in there. Once we get into Friday the 2nd, we do dry down. I think we get sunshine back very, very quickly. Strong evaporation, but there will be a ton of water that we're going to have to be dealing with in the area. The 3rd and 4th also stay dry. High pressure close by, and I think we see good evaporation, good drying. The week of the 5th is interesting. We are very, very active to our west. As a matter of fact, when you wake up on Monday the 5th, I can count 1, 2, 3, 4 systems spaced out across the country that are wanting to try and head this way. However, I don't think all of them hit us. We're looking at a very active precipitation pattern a little bit farther to the west, central western Corn Belt, Great Plains, but we don't see it right away here. So I'm going to say the 5th could stay dry. The 6th, we see a few scattered showers. 7th, a few scattered showers. Finally, a strong front for Thursday the 8th. As we move forward after that, it does try to dry down a little bit, but that means we've got plenty of moisture to work with and not a lot of wide open days in between now and May 10th. I'm Ryan Martin.
At Beacon Credit Union, we're not just lenders. We're your trusted partners. We listen, advise, and support your financial success. Whether expanding your farm, upgrading equipment, purchasing real estate, needing operating funds, or refinancing existing debt, we're here for you. Start at beaconcu.org. Insured by ASI, not federally insured, EHO lender.
Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and so far this spring, 2% of Indiana's corn crop and 3% of the state's soybeans have already been planted. That's as of Easter Sunday, according to USDA. I checked in this past week with a farmer near Salem to find out how things are going so far in southern Indiana.
We have gotten started. We've got about 500 acres of beans to plant, which we've planted about 300 of them. So, yeah, we feel like we've got a pretty good start there.
And that's Greg Rowland, who farms near Campbellsburg in Washington County.
We raise popcorn for Preferred Popcorn. We haven't started on popcorn yet. We would like to see this ground get in a little better shape and warm up a little more before we start it.
He says they received a significant amount of rainfall in early April, which has caused a few minor setbacks.
We got 7-8 inches of rain. The creeks and rivers got out of their banks and flooded, closed a few roads. But, yeah, they seem to go down pretty quick. We do have some high and dry ground, and that's kind of what let us be able to get started. The one thing that we have struggled with now is getting chicken litter spread. We still have a couple hundred acres of litter to get spread, and we would definitely like to already have that done.
What sets Greg's farm apart from many others is his passion for using a variety of different cover crops.
Where we're putting our soybeans, we pretty much go with a straight cereal rye. But where we're going with our popcorn, this time we use some barley on part of the acres, and the other part of those acres we did use the cereal rye, but we still use vetch, crimson clover, some kale. We had radishes in there, so that's still a big part of our program. We've been able to cut back on chemicals. We do have a roller crimper that if the cover gets big, we'll plant it green and then roll it down. Sometimes we can terminate with the roller, and sometimes we use some chemistry, but still roll it down on the ground to put the mat on the ground.
So what's Greg's advice for other farmers this spring?
I guess I should give myself this advice, is to try to be patient. It's very hard to do.
Check out my full chat with Washington County farmer Greg Rowland. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. Well, Bayer says it may stop producing glyphosate, which is the world's most popular weed killer. That is, unless it can get court protection against lawsuits blaming the herbicide for causing cancer. Eric Pfeiffer has the story.
Yeah, I mean, it would be it'd be hugely detrimental.
That's Tommy Butts, Purdue Extension weed scientist. He's a guest on the latest Purdue Crop Chat podcast from Hoosier Ag Today.
I'm sure we have to do some research into what the economics and everything would look like down the path here, but at least from a weed science standpoint, you know, we talk a lot about glyphosate resistance and how, you know, we've lost effectiveness on certain things, but man, glyphosate is still really good on a whole lot of different weeds, and it's in probably just about every single mix that we have in soybeans and corn.
The Wall Street Journal says Bayer currently produces about 40% of the world's glyphosate needs. If Bayer gets out of the glyphosate game, it could be a big hit to farmers' checkbooks.
It doesn't mean that we would completely lose glyphosate, right? It would be Bayer that is shutting down their manufacturing in the United States. Depending on trade wars and other things, you know, imports could still very likely be impacted too, but we still should have supply somewhere. But what that does, you know, to the cost, instead of being, you know, $3 to $5 an acre, maybe all of a sudden Roundup becomes a $20 an acre treatment, which would be just crazy to think about.
Hear more from Tommy Butts as he joins soybean Sean Castile and Dan Cornquinn on the Purdue Crop Chat podcast, exclusively from Hoosier Ag Today. Find it in our app or wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Eric Pfeiffer.
Well, deer are very important to Indiana woodlands. But in many areas of the state, deer populations have grown far beyond what the land can support.
Through their browsing and what they eat, they can actually reduce plant diversity and limit the growth of some of our tree seedlings, such as oak, which are both economically and ecologically important.
And that's Jared Brook, a Purdue Extension wildlife specialist.
They can actually cause issues with increases in invasive species that they don't eat, like Japanese stilt grass or garlic mustard. Same thing with crop damage. Deer really love to eat soybeans and eat corn, and they can cause issues with some of our crops.
For woodland owners across Indiana who may not be sure if deer are even a problem on their property, how can they better understand and measure deer impacts?
So I think the first step is being aware and being kind of tuned in to the problems that deer can cause. Fortunately, with the help of the Nature Conservancy here in Indiana, we at Purdue Extension actually created a series of publications and videos called the Deer Impact Toolbox, which are designed to help landowners really understand, monitor, and then address the impacts that deer have in their woodlands. And these resources are a great starting point for any landowner that's interested in learning more about deer impacts.
He adds the best way to manage those impacts from deer are hunting, habitat management, and plant protection.
So through the reduction of the number of deer by harvesting does on your property, that can be an effective way to reduce their impact. Also, if you can improve the habitat for deer on your property, either through forest stand improvement or through timber harvest, you can actually create more food on the landscape, which reduces overall deer impact. And then the last really big way is through protecting the plants that you're trying to keep deer from browsing. And that can be fencing, tree plantations, putting tree tubes or tree shelters on young trees, or, you know, fencing sensitive areas from deer browsing. And all of these methods, you know, have different pros and different cons and different effectiveness. And these methods and more are actually all outlined in that deer impact toolbox. So landowners that are having impact from deer can utilize those resources to really figure out what is the best method for your means and for your property.
You can hear more of my conversation with Jared Brook and find a link to that deer impact toolbox. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. Coming up on Hoosier Ag This Week, you'll hear from a Jackson County farmer who shares the struggles that her family is facing regarding the H-2A Farm Labor Program. And if you have a son or daughter in high school and they're thinking about a career in agriculture, you'll hear from Nate Perry at Huntington University and their Department of Agricultural Studies about their Ag Bioscience Academy coming up in June. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today. This is Hoosier Ag This Week.
Ag Bioscience, the number one ag tech podcast globally, is now available on video. Hear the latest from innovators in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
Some of our producers are actually using agricultural grade drones to spray disinfectant on the roofs of their barns because they're concerned about those wild birds migrating and spreading virus through the environment. And so if they can disinfect barns and then the water, if it rains, doesn't collect all of that virus and then somehow get entered into that barn and into that animal population, then they have been able to avoid potential introduction. So it's simple things like that that you don't always think of. So it's not necessarily that it's an innovative product, but it's two things that already exist. We already have effective disinfectants. We already have kind of those agricultural drones and those aerial ways of applying different product and marrying those two things together.
Get more episodes online at agrinovisindiana.com. Click on podcasts. Also available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thank you again, as always, for joining us here on Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and farm labor reform has been a top priority for many Indiana farmers, as well as ag businesses and farm policy organizations. I recently spoke with a Jackson County farmer in southern Indiana who shared her family's story about the struggles they continue to face with the current H-2A farm labor program.
Of course, if there were 100 people in Jackson County who would be willing to pick watermelons and knew how to do it, I would for sure be using them, because at this point, the H-2A program is a pain in the rear, but I can't. I don't have that option.
And that's Megan Van Loo with Hackman Family Farm Market near Brownstown, Indiana. She says her family farm uses immigrant labor to help harvest over 300 acres of watermelons and other produce. She says the first issue with the current H-2A program is that the workers' visas are only good for 9 months at a time.
What happens is those farmers have to file then for multiple petitions. With every worker comes a new petition every 9 months, and what they're having to do is multiple because they need those farm workers to overlap. Well, it's adding extra costs, not only for the farmer, but it's adding extra costs to the government because they're doing more paperwork. And it's costing extra time and effort for the employee as well, because then they have to find new work every 9 months.
The second issue is the adverse effect wage rates, or the minimum wage that each state must pay their immigrant ag workers. And that rate is set not by the states, but by the U.S. Department of Labor. They have different rates for different regions across the U.S.
Currently, we're paying $19.57 per hour. Kentucky, which is in a different region, is only at $15.87 an hour. So they're competing with Kentucky with a $3.70 per hour difference. And I mean, how do you budget for that when the price of watermelons hasn't changed? And the other people who are harvesting at the exact same time can do it for less. Another thing that is included if you use this program is you're required to cover regulated housing for these employees, transportation, insurance, visa expenses, as well as transportation to and from whatever country they're coming from. So basically, farmers are looking anywhere from $25 an hour to $35 an hour when everything comes into effect. And it is crippling. I don't know that anybody understands that, even when they start with the program, just how extensive it is.
Overall, Megan says she and her family are being squeezed simply by going through all the right legal channels for obtaining farm labor.
The limits of this program are really showing through, and we're really asking for lawmakers to come together with policymakers to find a solution for us, to make it easier to do the right thing, to follow the rules, to do it the way it's supposed to be done so we can avoid any illegal workforce competing with local workforce. We don't want that.
Check out our full conversation. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. And if your son or daughter is in high school and they're thinking about a career in the ag industry, then they'll want to be a part of the Ag Bioscience Academy hosted by Huntington University coming up this summer. It's June 23rd through 27th on their campus in Huntington, Indiana.
You know, one thing we know about the ag students, they don't like to sit in a classroom, with no windows. They want to be able to be out and about in the fields and in the greenhouse space.
And that's Nate Perry with Huntington University.
They want to be looking through microscopes and really ultimately getting their hands dirty. Yes, there's a soils lab that they will actually participate in where their hands get really dirty. But it is, it's highly interactive, very engaging, you know, as they think about what a career could look like in agriculture.
Nate says that high school students attending the Ag Bioscience Academy will learn all about the many different facets of the ag industry, including agronomy, precision agriculture, technology, plant biology, animal science, and ag business.
For some students, they really understand for maybe the first time how science-driven agriculture really is, whether it's a drone in the air or it's something looking under a microscope or, gosh, even the business side. We just don't throw things at the wall and hope it sticks. We unpack input costs, and guest speakers come in to talk about research and development and what it may look like to turn that into sales.
The cost for the entire 5-day overnight Ag Bioscience Academy is only $250 per student.
We want to try and make sure that this is something that students can afford. And there's even scholarships available. If someone is in a position where they're feeling really, really stretched pretty thin, and even the $250 might be a little bit of a reach for them, there are some scholarships even beyond what's already been provided to help drive that cost down.
You can sign up your high school son or daughter for Huntington University's Ag Bioscience Academy by visiting huntington.edu/foresterscamp. You can also find that link and read more at HoosierAgToday.com. And with that, it's time to turn out the lights on this week's edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. If you missed any portion of today's show, feel free to download the podcast version. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. Also, make sure to download the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app. It's a free download for iPhone and Android. From our award-winning news team of Eric Pfeiffer, Andy Eubank, and our chief meteorologist, Ryan Martin, I'm CJ Miller, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's number one and most listened to Farm Network.